Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. It is Monday, and this is a bonus edition of the Inside the Huddle podcast because we're celebrating my friend Jeff Rimebold getting on a plane tonight and heading to the UK. Jeff, it's going to be great to have you over.
Yeah, it's going to be great to get over. As a matter of fact, you know, I haven't even packed a suitcase yet. I've got some stuff I got to do before we get on the plane.
That sounds about right for you. That's just, that would be,
you know what? You learn how to move fast and when you're in this business. But I got too caught up in the games yesterday. I mean, what a fantastic Sunday of football.
Yeah, it was. It was another great Sunday. Maybe not quite the drama of the week before, but again, we had everything you could look for. We had an upset with the Chiefs but losing at home to Tampa Bay. We had all eyes on Jared Goff. We saw a genuine Super Bowl contender with the Dallas Cowboys seeing off the Baltimore Ravens. We had some injuries, sadly. AJ Green, hamstring tear, which looks like he's done for the season. Giovanni Bernard for the Cincinnati Bengals out with a knee injury. So again, the Bengals, you look at the offense they've lost in the past 12 months, just too much to overcome for that team. So it did have it all, Jeff. Let's start with Dallas. I mean, because we're going to record two podcasts, obviously we've got a big week on Sky Sports, seven live games. We've got three Thanksgiving Day games on Thursday. So on Wednesday, we'll record our picks. So today we can make it all about looking back. And for me, Dallas are one of the headlines. It looked like they took Baltimore's best punches and they kept rolling.
Yeah, you know, I think that was a watershed game for them because they, in my mind, they needed to play physical against a team that, you know, has a great front seven. They matched up, Baltimore matched up front with the Cowboys. And, you know, you keep, with these Cowboys, you keep waiting for the quarterback, you keep waiting for Dak to, you know, kind of stumble a little bit. Doggone it, if he doesn't throw, you know, two to Dez and one to Cole, and you know, just plays way, way, way beyond his maturation point, way beyond his years, way beyond what any expectations. I don't care what anybody says. There's no way that anybody in the Cowboy organization expected him to play this well and play with the composure that he plays with now.
No, there's no way, Jeff, because otherwise they wouldn't have been sniffing around Paxton Lynch in the draft, and they wouldn't have waited to the fourth round to secure their franchise quarterback of the future. I think that was the thing that struck me. Dak just never looks like a rookie, Jeff. And I tell you where I was really struck with the Cowboys. At halftime, they interviewed Jason Garrett as he was running off the field, and they said to him, "Are you concerned about Ezekiel Elliott not getting going?" And he was like, "Nope, we're just going to keep rolling. We'll be fine." And after the game, they talked to Dak Prescott and they said, were you concerned at any point? And he was like, no, they seem unbothered by whatever the opponent can throw at them. So physically, from a talent point of view, they're an outstanding team. That's why they're 9-1 on the season. But I tell you where I'm really, really drawn to this Cowboys team is the mental strength. And they're led by a couple of rookies. So that is incredible.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, you talk about in coaching, you're always concerned about rookies. Matter of fact, the coaching saw that, you know, for every rookie you play, you lose a football game. But these two kids really seem to play way beyond their years, have maturity way beyond their years. And, you know, even though they didn't give Elliott a lot of touches yesterday, he still was an impactful player on the game. And to me, that this is why it was so important for the Cowboys to play well. They're not surprising anybody anymore. You know, this is a Baltimore Ravens team that has great people up front. Mm-hmm. They came in and they did everything they could to make the Cowboys one-dimensional, and the Cowboys, you know, proved that they were up to the task. So I agree with you. I think they and the Seahawks now are starting to separate themselves, you know, in the NFC in terms of Super Bowl potential with six games left to go in the season.
Yeah, you look at Baltimore, and it was a physical challenge that they presented, Jeff, that they're big up front on defense. But Dallas's last three drives, they marched 10 plays, 13 plays, and 13 plays to ice the game away. I mean, it was just, there's lots of different things you can pick each week with the Dallas Cowboys that impress you. And that's probably why we have to say okay, it's November the 21st. There's plenty of football still to be played, but they are for real. They are a Super Bowl contender. They have the look of a Super Bowl team. Now, we've said that, and we always say it in the media. We're always like, oh, yeah, they're for real. You know, the Vikings are for real. Well, then they lost four in a row. But there's something special about this team. It has that kind of feel. It has the feel that, you know, teams go on these certain roles at certain years in their existence. Carolina did it last year out of the NFC. It feels like Dallas are on a similar role at the moment.
Yeah, you know, it's about belief. In that locker room, those guys believe in one another. You know, you talk to Cole Beasley, and he's going to tell you that, you know, in spite of his antics and in spite of, you know, some of the way that he struggles to present himself, you know, in the right way, he talks about what a great leader Dez is. And there seems to be a camaraderie on this Cowboy team. And then you look at the speech that Romo gave in his press conference about, it said all the right things. I mean, you talk about coach doing a great job coaching. I'm going to say something. Jason Garrett is the most underrated coach in the NFL because he's had to deal with more issues, more challenges. I mean, they're getting ready to play a big game against Baltimore. And what's the headline in the media the day before the game? McClain suspended for another 10 games. He won't play for another year. But they just seem to play through all that stuff. And you talked about those three drives, Neil, and that's really, really critical stuff that you point out because that's Dallas's recipe for success. Let's be honest, they're not there yet defensively. Rod Marinelli has those guys playing above their talent level. But when they can put together 10 and 13 play drives, that's the recipe for success for the Cowboys going forward.
You mentioned Seattle there, Jeff, and they kind of eased their way in the end to a victory over Philadelphia. It wasn't easy, but it was, you know, it never looked like a game that they were going to lose, the Seahawks at home. They haven't lost at home all season. And the one play that stood out to me, Jeff, purely from, and I mentioned this on our coverage last night on Sky, purely because there's no way they run that play early in the season when he's so banged up, was Russell Wilson running downfield, catching a touchdown pass from Doug Baldwin. To me, you can look at every other play in that game, and the one that stands out and sings from the rooftops for me is that Russell Wilson must be feeling good about himself right now again from a physical point of view to be running downfield and catching touchdown passes.
Yeah, you know, and if they get healthier as you go into the season, if they can get Michael Bennett back, they, you know, full season, you know, if they get healthier, Cam Chancellor and those guys play at, you know, at their top level, this is going to be a really tough team to beat in the playoffs, particularly if they get home field advantage through the playoffs. So as we look forward into these next 6 weeks when the games are the biggest, when each week the focus gets, you know, brighter and, you know, the games get bigger, the pressure grows, all of it, every game means more. Both the Cowboys and the Seahawks are fighting for a huge advantage for each of them, and that's home field through the playoffs. Whoever gets that has the best chance.
Yeah, and absolutely, Jeff. And people will hear us talking on Sky about the race for the number one seeds, and it is important because both number one seeds were in the Super Bowl last year. I'm going to actually do a little bit of digging because I feel like it's been 3 or 4 years now that the number one seeds have met in the Super Bowl, so it is vital, isn't it?
Well, it is, and particularly when you talk about those two places. Now, you can put 100,000 people in the Death Star in Dallas and another 25 or 30,000 outside watching the game. That environment, that noise, that intensity level in that stadium, when you're the Cowboys, that's a huge advantage for you. And everybody talks about, you know, I mean, the reality of Seahawks is University of Washington sits about a couple miles away from, you know, where the Seahawks play. And when that crowd gets into it and they really roar and they get loud, it actually sets off the seismograph in the theology department at the University of Washington. That's how loud that crowd is. So those, the ability to play in that environment and have that energy and have that noise, I can't even describe to you, Neil, how hard it is to function in that kind of noise environment for an offense. So it's a huge plus for either of those two teams if they can get that number one seed.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say the Seahawks fans cheer and the University of Washington linemen jump offside, Jeff. That would be bad.
I don't know. If practicing this properly, too, because I'm going to tell you something. It is so loud in that place. And, you know, what's amazing about it, you know, the Cowboys have a dome stadium, but that is outside. And so the noise normally carries up when you don't have a roof on the top of the building. But it doesn't matter. I mean, that place is unbelievably loud. It's so loud, it actually hurts. When you're there and you're in that environment, it actually hurts your ears.
Yeah, still one on my bucket list, Jeff. Never made it to a Seahawks game in Seattle. It's still on the list. It's going to get done one day, I hope. Let's lump a couple of teams together that we're going to watch on Thanksgiving Day on Thursday. So Minnesota will take on Detroit in the first of our three games on Sky Sports on Thursday. Both teams got a win this weekend. Minnesota beat Arizona 30-24. Detroit beat Jacksonville 26-19. That's every game now this season, Jeff, for Detroit, who are 6-4. Every game decided by 7 points or fewer. So they're in close games every week. But I wanted to talk about how important it is, because you've coached both these units as well, defense and special teams. Xavier Rhodes scored on a 100-yard interception return for the Vikings. Cordarrelle Patterson, a 104-yard kickoff return. And Detroit got a couple of touchdowns outside of offense. Andre Roberts, a 55-yard punt return. Raphael Bush, a 39-yard interception return. And both those were keys to these teams winning at the weekend.
When you can generate points outside of the offense, you know, you talk all the time about field position is what the special teams are responsible for. Mm-hmm. And turnovers is what you're trying to get out of your defense. But when you can get points out of those units, that is huge for a team. Now, you look at that game yesterday, and the Lions couldn't run the ball the length of their arm. You know? I mean, they could not run the football. And, you know, I'll be honest, Jacksonville's good up front. Malik Jackson had a big day, and Derek Marks played well, other than jumping off sides there at the end of the game. But they couldn't run the ball. They need Amir Abdullah to get fast and get healthy off that foot because right now, you're asking Matthew Stafford, and you know what? Here's a guy that nobody talks about. Talk about MVP.
Yeah.
Here's a guy that has kept his team winning, and like you said, they've been behind in the fourth quarter in every single football game. And you know it's tough to win like that. And then you know Minnesota, same thing. They're struggling on offense, and you know they can't run the ball. Bradford's got he's got it all on his shoulders. But the defense stepped up this week, got him a touchdown, and Patterson, who's one of the best kickoff returners in the NFL, hit that hundred yarder, and those are huge momentum swings too for your football team.
Yeah, they are. We talked about Dallas a little bit. Let's skip ahead to the Sunday night game, because our second Thanksgiving Day game is going to be Washington and Dallas, and we'll preview all these a bit later in the week. But Washington had a big win on Sunday Night Football against the Green Bay Packers. And Jeff, we've got a question in the mailbag here, which I'll pull out now from Mark, who says, how much does Kirk Cousins get paid next season? So Kirk kind of gambled on himself this year with the franchise tag. I mean, I think he's going to be getting that. If Andrew Luck's on $24, $25 million a year, I mean, Kirk's going to be getting $20 million a year. If you look at mid-range quarterbacks are getting $13, $14 million a year, I feel like he's going to get paid in the offseason because he's growing with each week, and he absolutely shredded the Green Bay Packers last night in very windy conditions. And actually, they were talking about it in the commentary quite a bit about how you fare going with the wind and into the wind. Well, going into the wind in the fourth quarter, Washington scored 20 points.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you something. There's a lot of great jobs in the world, but one of them, one of the best ones next year is going to be Kirk Cousins' financial planner, because you're going to have a lot of dollars to work with. I'm going to tell you something now. You talk about $13 million for a mid-level quarterback. You look at what that guy's capable of doing for you. And, Neil, this is not a great year for quarterbacks in the draft. There's a kind of a jumble of five guys. None of them, in my opinion, is a first-round talent based upon what he's done on the field. Now, there's going to be a couple of them that are going to get drafted in the first round because they're going to get overdrafted. But here's a guy who's been there, done that, proven it. If he can take the Redskins into the playoffs and deep into the playoffs, he's going to pretty much be able to name his price going forward.
Jeff, I'm going to be working in the studio with a couple of former defensive backs on Thursday, yourself and Sean Gale, but I reckon you might get the call from the Packers before then. I might be sat there on my own because the Packers can't cover anyone.
Wow. I'm going to tell you something. You know, this defense has really, really started to unravel. The team has started to unravel, but the Packers defense, you know, they're giving up way too many big plays. You watched that game last night, and you know, you talk about the strength of their defense, and obviously you talk about Clay Matthews, but it's the back end where they drafted and tried to rebuild in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. And if you look at them on paper, you see the strength of their defense is in the back end, but boy, they're just not playing that way. And you know, like I say, too many, way too many big plays. And when you're giving up explosive plays like that, it's disheartening for your football team because it really puts pressure on your offense, and you know you have to play from behind, and it's just not a good situation. That type of defense has got to pick it up. And McCarthy made the statement after the game, well, you know, our asses are up against the wall, and their season's on the line. And you know, and right now, the only good thing for the Packers is they're playing in the NFC North, where they're still two back with their, you know, they could take care of their own destiny because you got to play conference games going down the stretch.
Jeff, give us a bit of X's and O's from the defensive side of the ball, because they talked last night about how the Packers were in kind of two deep looks in terms of their safeties, playing two deep safeties. And I know that means there's no one actually specifically right in the middle of the field, but should Washington have split those two safeties as often as they did?
No, there's no way. You play cover two to try and eliminate big throws. You get your hands on the receivers outside. You get, you know, you slot in the slot. You try and get your hands on the guy. And normally you've got somebody running in the middle of the field, because obviously when you play too high, guys, what you want to do is create three or four verticals on the defense. So the two high safeties get split, what we call a divide concept on offense. But somebody has got to be responsible for running down the middle. In the Tampa 2 scheme, they were running some of the time, it's the middle linebacker. If it's not the middle linebacker, then the corner has to read 2-1, the inside receiver to the outside receiver. If the inside receiver goes vertical, he has to man the outside receiver. So there were communication issues. There were critical breakdowns. You just don't see guys running free like that without having communication issues. And frankly, and I hate to say this because it sounds like I'm downing another coach, but that's been a challenge for Dom Capers' defenses over the years in Green Bay, just communication issues and giving up too many big plays.
There's been a little bit of back and forth between Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers, not necessarily direct, but sort of veiled barbs. And you look at Aaron Rodgers kind of calling out some of his teammates, you know, they lack juice, they're not quite bringing it. And he said, but I bring it every week. And part of me, when I read those quotes, Jeff, was like, well, Aaron, you can't do that. You're the leader. You can't be saying, well, I'm all right, but everyone else is not. But then I watched him play last night, Jeff, and you can understand why he's frustrated so much. They're asking him to do so much. And again, he was over 350 yards last night, three touchdowns, but now they've lost four straight. He must be frustrated.
Yeah, you've got to be frustrated. And it's been really, it's gone from bad to worse for Aaron Rodgers, not on the field particularly, but, you know, I don't know if you saw the article that was written by a former Packer beat writer where he got into some things that really, I mean, to me, I understand the media's job. Shoot, we're part of it, you know, but when you start talking about a guy's personal life and his relationship with his family.
With his family, yeah, I saw that. He doesn't speak to some of his family members.
Parents have sent him Christmas presents, and he sends them back. And, you know, one of the Packer players, an unquote unnamed Packer player, said that, you know, when Aaron Rodgers' father comes to Green Bay, he has to ask the other players for tickets because Aaron won't give him. I mean, it's just, what the heck does that have anything to do with anything? Now, you can say, well, if your personal life, you know, in that kind of function that, you know, it's going to reflect in the play. I don't see that. What I see is a guy that doesn't have enough weapons around him. They can't protect him as well as they need to. A defense that is giving up way too many points, so now he has to play from behind and think everything's on his shoulders. And frankly, some stubbornness on offense because they don't have guys that can get away from press coverage, and they don't do very many things to help those guys get off of So, you know, again, I think there's a lot of issues, you know, in Green Bay, way beyond, way more important than whether Aaron Rodgers' parents like his girlfriend or not.
Yeah, I think that's gone past the line. I think that's where, you know, as media, you have to kind of respect certain things, and it should be about the football and what's going on there. All I would say is that the reason they do that, Jeff, is because Aaron responds to it all. So it's kind of like, you know, it's almost like Twitter trolls, you know, when you respond and you're fighting a losing battle. But that's what Aaron kind of does. He can't leave it alone. He responds to it. And I think people go digging for more of it. It's not right. And I agree with you. You know, football reporters should be writing about football. And I don't think that affects what Aaron Rodgers does on the field.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question now, because you've had the opportunity to sit and interview him. You've had the opportunity to sit and be around him, watch him practice, do all those things that you know, you've got access to him that most of the media hasn't had. Did you ever find him snarky or tough to deal with, or, you know, a pain in the tail?
No. No, for the first time I dealt with him. But it was interesting because he does pay attention to stuff, Jeff, that you wouldn't think players would pay attention to. So the interview that I did was for an iPad magazine, which never actually made it to print. And then the next time I went to... So Aaron was great. He was great. And he actually... It was supposed to be a 10-minute interview. We talked for 30 minutes, so I didn't see that. I didn't see that kind of difficult to deal with. None of that. He was brilliant. He was a fantastic interview, and we were kind of shooting the breeze for way more time than I was supposed to have. But then when I wrote my children's annual last year, I went back to the Packers, and I know the PR staff there very well, and I went back to the Packers, and I said, I'd love to have Aaron Rodgers involved in this. Could he tell me about a week in the life of an NFL quarterback? And the PR guy, who I worked with in NFL Europe for years, said, Neil, I'm sorry, Aaron remembers everything, and he remembers that article he did with you last time never made it to print, so we're going to have to pass this time. So he probably pays too much attention to stuff in the media that you would not expect a quarterback to be worrying about. I saw he called out Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk last week as well, didn't he, Jeff? So I'd say no, I haven't seen any of it, but there's some sensitivity to the guy, for sure.
Well, you know, again, that's interesting you say that, because if he keeps track of what's said to that extent, then, you know, I would advise him to let it go, because he's got way more important things to focus on than whether an article it's written about to get to the print or not. Yeah. And again, like you say, it's a slippery slope when you go down that reactionary path, because the media will always have the last say. And, you know, the players have to understand that.
Jeff, what about Jared Goff? We saw his NFL debut then. He went 17 of 31, 134 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. For 55 minutes, he was grinding his way to his first NFL victory. The Rams were up by 10. Ryan Tannehill comes back, two touchdowns. Jarvis Landry gets bulldozed into the end zone by his own offensive line. And then Devontae Parker catches the 9-yard touchdown with 36 seconds left. I felt like the Rams hit the self-destruct button, and it wasn't necessarily Goff. They gave up some defensive penalties. Was Goff what you expected? Got some good and some bad. What did you think of his rookie debut?
Yeah, I would have given it about a C plus. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that this is what I anticipated the Rams would be doing way earlier in his rookie year. You know, finally Gurley got a lot of touches, and it, you know, they kind of managed him a lot of easy things. Throws, not a lot of complex stuff, not a lot of checks at the line of scrimmage, just giving him an opportunity, you know, putting it on the running back and the defense to keep the game close, which is what, when we saw him get drafted last year, I remember talking to you about this in Chicago at the draft deal, about how that was the formula when he had Steve McNair. And I think that it's interesting to me that they have waited this long. Now, it's tough on the kid that he had, number one, to open at home, number two, you know, in the rain, and, you know, so all in all, I think it's a good start for him. It's something he can build on, and Rams fans can, cling to a little bit, because there's not much else to cling to right now if you're a Rams fan.
No. Late on, Jeff, Alec Ogletree had a 15-yard penalty for a late hit out of bounds. Aaron Donald had a 15-yarder for a hit on Ryan Tannehill. Those were crucial as the Dolphins fought back in this game. That's kind of what you get with Jeff Fisher and Greg Williams teams, isn't it? I mean, you got to love the way they fly to the football. Some of the defense they played was fantastic. But they're always kind of living right on the edge, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And, frankly, I must say that I'm not sure anymore in today's NFL that those kinds of teams, those kinds of defenses now, you talk about the 85 Bears, which, when the team Sean played on, and those great Ravens defenses, and Jerry Glanville's House of Pain with the Oilers back in the day, those types of defenses, buddy Philadelphia teams with Waters, Dirty Waters.
Yep, Andre Waters.
Controlling the back end, Andre Waters. You look at those teams, I'm not sure they can survive in today's NFL because they're calling these games so very close. And, you talk about free real estate. Just take those two penalties. That's 30 yards of field position that you give up for nothing.
On a rainy day.
In a game like that, when you're playing every yard count and you can't give up free yards, that's one of the tough things about coaching defense today. If you want your players to be aggressive, you want them to be physical, you want them to fly to the ball, you want them to go right to the lunatic fringe, if you will. But the way they officiate the games today, they're so protective of the players that, I'm not sure that kind of defense, how much of that you can play unless you can score points.
No, I'm with you on that one, Jeff. I mean, I think Jeff Fish has always had those kind of teams. And I think it's from a bygone era. And we didn't get into this on Sky last night, but I think Jeff Fisher is overrated. I mean, there's certain coaches you like and certain ones you don't necessarily feel should have all the headlines around the NFL. Jeff Fisher last night tied Tom Landry for the most losses of any coach in NFL history. Now, you've got to be there for a long, long time to get those losses. I understand that. But this is a guy who's had 6 winning seasons in 20 years as a head coach. And when he chose between the Rams and Miami in 2012, the Dolphins treated him like the Pope had arrived in South Florida. They helicoptered him in. He was a rock star. I think his reputation exceeds what he produces as a head coach.
Well, it's a tough one. This is a tough one for me to chew on because the guy's a good guy and I know him and like him very much personally. But the realities are the realities. You talk about lost more games than anybody in NFL history as a head coach. Well, and he tied Tom Landry. Well, Tom Landry was around a lot longer than Jeff Fisher. There was a lot more games involved there. And so when you look at you got to always look at the bottom line. Like Coach Vermeer used to say, keep the main thing the main thing. And the main thing in coaching is wins and losses. And, you look at the record and you say, took a team to the Super Bowl. Yeah, did some great things transitioning a team out of Houston into Tennessee. But the reality is the reality. You can't shake the numbers.
Mm. When you said keep your main thing the main thing, I keep going back to that Rob Ryan chat we had a few weeks ago. I'm wondering how he's doing rearranging himself on the sidelines.
Talk about rearranging. That's an incredible segue, when you talk about rearranging, because look at the last drive that the Bengals had against the Bills. Now, that drive where they forced the Bengals to throw the ball short. Bernard, I think, had 4 or 5 catches in that last drive. That drive to me really showed how Rob, who's now running the defense, and Rex have grown, because typically that would have been a time when they would have gone plus one, sent an extra blitzer, and tried to go for the jugular. And sometimes that didn't work so well for them.
Right.
What I saw yesterday was they rushed 3, they rushed 4, they played Tampa 2, they played real soft 2, they kept the ball in front, they didn't give. and it went down to the last play, throwing it in the end zone, but it worked for him. And I thought that was some real growth by the Bills' defensive coaching staff, because that's not typically been the way they would have defended that scenario.
No, and they knew that the Bengals were without A.J. Green, who tore his hamstring on one of the opening drives of the game. And as I mentioned, the Bengals, Jeff, when you look at what they've lost in the last calendar year, it's been Tyler Eifert for the first half of this season. Now they've lost A.J. Green and Giovanni Bernard. They lost Mohamed Sanu to free agency, Marvin Jones to free agency, and the cherry on top of all that, offensive coordinator Hugh Jackson. I mean, it's just been too much to overcome, which is probably why this team has 3 wins on the year.
Yeah, they're the biggest disappointment in the NFL to me right now. And again, here's another, you can talk about coaches, here's another guy, and again, a great guy. I like Marvin very much.
Me too.
Marvin and I started in his business together. He was at Idaho State. I was coaching at Montana. Marvin has been, he is the second longest tenured NFL head coach to Bill Belichick. Mm. And, you know, I think if he was working for any other organization, just because the Brown family isn't big on paying guys that are working for him, I think that's given him the opportunity to hang around probably past his shelf life. Mm. He hasn't won a playoff game, you know, not one.
No. Well, he won't have to worry about that this year. Jeff.
You can always find a silver lining, Jeff.
Let's solve that problem. Anything else that caught your eye? I'll tell you one thing that caught mine, Jeff, and then anything else you got from week 11. Did you see the play where Josh Norman just punched the ball out from Jared Cook? Absolutely beautiful. Textbook, like watching Charles Peanut Tillman at his best. He just literally, like a boxer, punches that ball out.
So amazing you say that, because I was just about to say that was Peanut Tillman-esque.
Yeah.
But, you know, it really, really was. And that's great. That's great football. I mean, that's great football. Turnovers are so important. You know what's shocking to me, and I was listening to the build-up to the Lions-Jacksonville game, because, you know, I pay particular attention to that one because I know there's so many Jaguar fans in the UK, and I've always kind of been a Lions fan since the time I was a small kid. I did not realize until I was listening to the build-up to the game that the Jaguars were threatening to become the first team in NFL history since the merger in 1970 to go 6 games without creating a defensive turnover. Now, they got 2 in the game.
Wow.
And to their credit, but that's an incredibly long streak. I think it was like 23 quarters, you know, where they hadn't produced a defensive turnover. And in this game today, in today's NFL, maybe one of the most important things that defense can do is turn the football over. And, you know, that has been a big problem, one of the big problems. And I said that on Twitter. You can talk about Bortles. Yes, he's been a disappointment. But if your defense isn't turning the ball over in today's NFL, you're not getting field position and you're not getting bonus possession.
No, well, that
and
is...
And you're probably not winning.
No, you're probably not. And that is a perfect place to take us into the mailbag, Jeff. We will make our picks later in the week. Just on the picks, Jeff, if the Raiders win tonight, so we're recording this Monday...
Whoa, slow down here. We have a responsibility to the listener.
Oh, yes.
We have a responsibility to the listener. It is now, because they are playing in Mexico City, we now must refer to them as Los Malosos. They're not the Raiders. They're Los Malosos in Mexico City. The bad boys.
All right. So the Los Malosos, or however you say it. If the Raiders win, then I will have put together a perfect week of picks. I'll be 13-0, and you will be 12-1.
You know what? My Chiefs just killed me, man.
And that's where I want to go now. That's where I want to go now, the Chiefs game.
Before we go there, if you just pick all of the quarterbacks in the National Football League to throw an interception in the red zone, would you have picked Alex Smith?
No, he would have been the last one I would have picked.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And he throws a freaking pick in the red zone. I'm going, you got to be kidding me.
Well, let's start there, Jeff, with the mailbag, because David Cambridge, he asks, what about those Buccaneers? Do you think they've finally turned a corner and can grab the NFC South? So here's a stat for you, Jeff. You said about turnovers. The Chiefs went into that game last night leading the NFL in takeaways with 22. Jameis Winston didn't throw a pick last night, and that's now two interceptions for Jameis Winston in the last six games total. Taking care of the football matters. It can get you wins even in the most hostile of environments.
No question. No question about it. And it was interesting, you know, post-game comment, you know, to hear his head coach rave about his play yesterday. As he actually said, since he's been in the NFL, Dirt Cutter, since he's been in the NFL, he's not seen a quarterback play that well. I think that's a bit of an overstatement, but certainly when you're not turning it over, and that's so important to teams like the Bucs, who are not yet there talent-wise across the board on their roster. You have to play clean football, and Jameis Winston is playing clean football right now. So do I think the Bucs have turned the corner? I say, yeah, they turned the corner, but be careful because moving around that corner might be a lorry coming straight at you.
Yes, I don't think they're there yet.
It's a long, you know the deal, you know, in the NFL, it's a long corner you got to turn.
Let's take another question, Jeff. This one's from Tom Marshall. Tom's very excited, by the way, because his wife's going out on Thanksgiving Day night. So Tom has got the remote control for the entire evening. He can watch all three games on Sky Sports. So enjoy that, Tom. And I hope your wife has a nice time wherever she's going. Are the New York Giants, he says, are the Giants heading for a wild card spot and a run through the playoffs towards Super Bowl 51 against the Patriots? I mean, the Giants now have won five in a row, Jeff, and they are, I said this last week, I don't think I'd want to meet the Giants in the playoffs just because Eli's been there, he's done it. Nothing seems to faze him when it gets big at the end of the year.
Yeah, and Spags has got the defense playing a little bit. I mean, you know, you look at that football team. You know, how about the NFC East, man? You and I were talking earlier. It was like, okay, yeah. It's like, whatever. You know, now you've got three of the four teams, and the fourth team of the Eagles is good enough to beat anybody in the division. So you look at that. The Redskins are playing really good football. The Giants have won five straight. The Cowboys are 9-1. It's back to the old days where that, you know, those are going to be some huge, huge games as we go forward. And you know what? I agree with you. I would not want to play the Giants in the playoffs. They're big, they're physical on defense, they attack you from every level. They're going to get you. They've got pass rushers up front. The linebackers can come out and get after you. They're better in the secondary. I like that young safety they have. I think is
Landon Collins.
One of Yeah, you know what? And Landon Collins, this is a kind of interesting story. I was recruiting Louisiana, a kid from a place called Dutchtown, and where out that way. And I went and watched him play a high school football game, and I walked on the field, you know, and I was probably 30 college coaches walk on the field. And it was like, who in the world, what is that guy? I mean, he was a man. I mean, a straight man playing with little kids. And I just remember thinking to myself, wow, there's a future NFLer. And you know, he is really, really turned into a good player. You really like him around the box because he's such a great tackler. But, you know, he's got pretty good ball skills, too.
Yeah, five interceptions in his last four games, Landon Collins. Let's take two more, Jeff, and then I'll let you go and pack your suitcase. This one from Willie Trencher, who says, we've got three great Thanksgiving Day games this week. Which one are you looking forward to the most? So we've got Minnesota at Detroit, Washington at Dallas, and then Indianapolis and Pittsburgh. Jeff, this might be the best slate of Thanksgiving Day games we've had in years, but I've got to look at that Washington-Dallas one. I mean, Detroit always play close games. We've talked about that, but Washington-Dallas, these two, there's a special feel about that one.
I agree with you. I think that from a fan standpoint, the best game to watch is probably going to be Washington-Dallas because you got it's going to be probably the most wide open of the game. I think there's going to be I think if you like physical football, then tune into the, you know, the Lions and the Vikings. And, you know, here's the thing with the Lions. Let's talk about just a little bit about the Lions. Lions are in first place. They go on the bye, and both the Packers and the Vikings lose. So they come into yesterday's game in first place. They take care of business in a tough game, trap game, right? Jacksonville in your place, just coming off the bye. Now they got to get ready to play in your division, the most physical team in your division, in 4 days. this is going to be a huge, huge game in Detroit because the Lions, if you're a Lions fan, you can start to separate yourself from the other guys in the division. You got the tiebreaker right now on Minnesota, but if you knock them down on Thursday, you're really starting to feel good about your positioning going down the stretch. And conversely, if you're a Vikings fan, this is one you got to get. You have to win this football.
Yeah, Lions haven't won the NFC North since it wasn't the NFC North. It was the old NFC Central in 1991. So when you haven't even won the division you're in, Jeff, it means it's been a while.
Yeah, and I think they had a guy named Barry Sanders back in those days. Like I said, that's the one thing that I worry about the Lions. Can they run the ball? Until they get Amir Abdullah back, I just don't know if they can run the ball good enough to win down the stretch. There's so much that Stafford has to do.
All right, one more question. Jay Mooney says, do you think the Niners will win another game this season? And who's out in the offseason? Chip Kelly, Trent Baalke. So they play at the Dolphins, then at the Bears. That's a winnable game. At home against the Jets could be winnable. Then they finish with at the Falcons, at the Rams, and home to the Seahawks. So it's really those week 13 and 14 at the Bears and at home to the Jets. But, Jeff, I look at this talent across this team. Trent Baalke has got to be put on notice soon because, Jimmy got fired and he won five games. Chip Kelly's not winning five games.
No, I don't think he is now. If they have their best possible scenario, I think they could probably beat the Rams, And, like you said, you mentioned a few other games where they got a shot, the Jets. But, God, they're just not good enough. I mean, that's the cold, hard reality of it.
Yep.
They went from being a Super Bowl roster to real, and there's a lot of reason for it. Not Trent Baalke's not the only one. But the buck has to stop somewhere. And if they're going to stop the slide into mediocrity, or beyond mediocrity now, slide into the abyss that's going on in San Francisco, then I think they're going to need to make some changes, and they got to have a direction, and they got to have a plan, and they got to be aggressive, both in free agency and in the draft to get out and get the roster.
Absolutely. Jeff, I'm going to let you go and pack your stuff. Can't wait for you to get over here, mate. This means the games are getting big. We've got the business end of the season. We've got Thanksgiving on Thursday, three games. We have another three on Sunday. December the 3rd, we're going to do a fan forum in Belfast, a kind of Christmas special fan forum. It's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait for you to get over here, mate.
Well, I feel the same way, Neil. It's always great talking ball with you, but it's even more great talking ball with you. And we can do it right across the desk with one another. So I look forward to it. Look forward to seeing the fans again and being back in my second home.
All right. We can't wait to have him back over here, although our podcast might then start running to 2.5 hours in length, but we don't mind that. I'm sure you don't mind it either. Jeff, we'll get back on Wednesday and make our picks, yeah?
We'll do that. And, again, you're 13-0. You're on a roll, baby. So I got to knock you down a peg or two.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can get me back in check. Don't forget, I went 5-8 the week before. So it's all these things all balance out, those peaks and troughs of an NFL season. But until we check back in on Wednesday with a second offering of Inside the Huddle later this week, travel safe, Jeff, and say goodbye to the good folks.
I appreciate it, mate. Aloha.
Think you're the best at fantasy football? Don't wait till the end of the season to find out. Put your fantasy football knowledge to the test and win big every week at DraftKings.co.uk. DraftKings is the destination for one-week fantasy football. At DraftKings, you can play whenever you want, against who you like, in a variety of contests. Playing is easy. Just choose your contest, create your lineup, and follow your team live. Hurry to DraftKings.co.uk/NFL and play for free. That's DraftKings.co.uk/NFL. Play free for a shot at winning amazing prizes, including a trip to the Super Bowl, a jersey of your choice, DraftKings merchandise, and much more. Only at DraftKings.co.uk/NFL.